say it? Jaya Shiva Shankara.
Jaya Shiva Shankara.
Jaya Gangadhara.
Jaya Gangadhara.
Jaya Parvati.
Jaya Parvati.
Pati Hara Hara Hara.
Pati Hara Hara Hara.
That's the whole thing. Jaya Parvati.
Jaya Parvati.
Pati Hara Hara Hara.
Pati Hara Hara.
Jaya Shiva Shankara.
Jaya Shiva Shankara.
Jaya Gangadhara.
Jaya Gangadhara.
I think one of the lovely epithets of Shiva is Shiva Shankara, the bliss maker. So this chant, just have the understanding that every repetition of the mantras in this chant is feeding the bliss maker that lives in your being. Jaya Shiva Shankara. And Gangadhara, whose bliss ravishes the mind. Gangadhara, Ganga, you know, is the internal river of light. And this is the beloved of that internal river of light. It ravishes all in darkness. Jaya Shiva Shankara, Jaya Gangadhara, victory to that force of light that ravishes the darkness and explodes into our true nature.
Shiva Shankara Jaya Gangadhara. Shiva Shantara Jaya Ganga Ganga Dara Bhakti.
I remember many, 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 many years ago, probably, oh my goodness, probably 40 more, probably 43 years ago, something like that, I was driving across the country with my first husband. And we didn't know, what did we know? We were kids, we were in our early 20s. And we were driving back east. And we left LA and ended up crossing the Mojave Desert at, you know, noon. And we had two dogs, our two dogs, Pablo and Rufus, traveling with us. And this is, you know, a million years ago, before air-conditioned cars and before anybody knew you need to carry water and hydrate yourself. And here we are, you know, I don't know what ever possessed us. We probably didn't even realize we were going to be crossing the Mojave Desert. I don't know what we were thinking. So here we are in the middle of the desert with no water and these poor dogs and nothing and that sun. And I remember just, you know, in that desert, it just goes on forever and ever. And I remember that sun and that sense that this is never going to be over. And that sun is never going down. But then we were through. The sun went down and we got water. Everybody was fine. It's amazing how much endurance we have. You know, the indomitable human spirit. As some of you know, I've had a lot of personal family crisis this year, and my sister lives on the West Coast and I'm here on the East Coast, so I've had to manage a lot of stuff on my own. And she emailed me the other day, so I started to fill her in. And I found myself, this is last night, it's like midnight, and I had just gotten this email from her, and I really wanted to respond even though it was late and I was tired. And I found myself the eye maker, you know. Some of you are new, you don't know, but we've been studying the Patanjali Yoga Sutra, and one of the points that Patanjali makes about the mind is one of the aspects of mind is something that the Sanskrit word is asmita, and it's beautifully translated as the eye maker. It's the part of the mind that creates story, otherwise known as trouble. And that eye maker it started to go into the whole poor me melodrama, and just, you know, we're Jewish, did you know that word kvetch and complain and whine about, oh, I had to do this and I had to do this. And it was great because this went on for about a nanosecond. And then I was just like, nah, whatever. And I just, whatever I had written, I just deleted the whole thing. And I just wrote, just taking it one day at a time. And that's that indomitable spirit, you know, whatever is arising. I have a friend, Rick Jowery, is a really amazing world-class astrologer. And he always uses that metaphor of what's coming down the pike. When he reads your chart, he's just like, well, here's what's coming down the pike. He doesn't even live in New Jersey. I don't know why he says the pike. Is there a pike anywhere besides New Jersey? Oh, yeah, there's one in Pennsylvania, isn't there? The Pennsylvania Turnpike? The New Jersey Turnpike? So whatever's coming down the pike, that indomitable human spirit is quite capable to find its grounding in that inner space that we call in yoga the self with a capital S. And once we're connected to that self, even if we're only connected a little bit, you know, the maha experience, the ultimate experience, the great experience of the yogic path is complete and total merging of our consciousness with the so-called great self of absolute being. And in that state, the entire mind-body system is infused with what we call the light of 10,000 suns. Light of 10,000 suns. We sometimes just call that 10,000 sunlight Devi. and this path that's been given to me to teach, which is called Deva Yoga, is the path of opening into and dissolving into that light of 10,000 suns, otherwise known as Devi, which is why we call it Devi Yoga. So in the Maha Supreme state of that merging of consciousness with its own light, where pulsating with the voltage that's beyond the beyond. When somebody takes the electric chair, how many volts of electricity do they pump through them? Does anybody know? Who knows? Why am I talking about that here? But the light of 10,000 suns, when it comes through us, it doesn't. It only electrocutes the small self. But it makes the great self burn brighter and brighter. But the thing of it is, we only need to touch this much of it. That's enough. We don't need enlightenment. We don't need the whole mind-body system to be saturated with a gazillion volts of electricity. We just need to touch it, just the most subtle shift from that small self, asmita, I-maker, into the, yes. And then everything shifts. And what was in one moment, what we call in the tantric worldview a contracted state, opens up into this expansion. And we remember who we are. We remember why we're here. We remember to remember the great shining self. Why am I talking about this? Was there a point? Somewhere there was a point, but it was back there. I've lost it. So we've been studying Patanjali, but I've been giving people a vacation from Patanjali because I was torturing us a little too much. And since we have a bunch of new people tonight, I think I'll dispense with Patanjali tonight. But next week, you guys, so we only have 3 more weeks. So that's it. The next 3 weeks, we're back to chanting Patanjali. But let me read you. This is 238. This is Mukunda Styles. By abiding in behavior that respects the divine, otherwise known as what we call the self with a capital S, as omnipresent, one acquires an inspired passion for life. Isn't that nice? By abiding in behavior that respects the divine, or we could simply say, by abiding in behavior that respects the light of your own self, one acquires an inspired passion for life. Isn't that beautiful? You know, people sometimes think of yoga as a path of transcending the whole mind-body system, transcending Maya, life, the world, just going into some cave somewhere and living, you know, meditating 22 hours a day and, you know, eating nothing but one chickpea a day, something like that, a little bit of water. But no, by abiding in behavior that's in alignment with our true nature, which is the light of the self, one acquires an inspired passion for life. Yeah? It's such a hopeful notion that the more we reach into the self, the more alive we become. That the more we reach into our enormous capacity for truth, satya, contentment, santosha, socha, purity, all these lovely yamas and niyamas that Patanjali articulates so beautifully, the more we align ourselves with these values and ways of being, the more we acquire an inspired passion for life. It's just the opposite. You know, people think, oh, I have to give up all this stuff to practice yoga. It's going to be so dry and boring. And can't eat sugar anymore, no more caffeine. To become a vegan, no more wine with my dinner. But it's not like that at all. It's, that stuff is superficial. The true practice is aligning with the totality of one's being. And in that aligning, all the stuff that's not part of that alignment falls away. And we acquire an inspired passion for life. And the thing of it is, Bless you. We don't really acquire it. We discover it was always there. We discover the inspired passion for life is right here, just bubbling up from inside of us. And it wants to fill us with its joy. It wants to fill us with its amazing luminosity, that light of 10,000 suns. One of the mini dramas that's been going on in my personal life this season is one of my cats. He likes to go outside, you know. Our cats have always been outside cats. We've never had a problem. This season, my poor cat Baji has been attacked 3 times by feral cats, and he's required stitches every time, and the stitches have required he has to wear this collar so he can't, you know, pull the stitches out. So this is really, for him it's really hard, and for us it's really hard because it requires a lot of extra care, and the suture site has to be cleaned, and he has to get painkillers, and he has to be fed by hand, and he's uncomfortable, so he's needy, and he wakes me up at 3 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the morning, scratch me, feed me, So today I was just sitting at the harmonium and thinking about class, and he was just resting peacefully on the couch and everything was nice. And within 2 seconds he came, plopped himself right down on my books and my papers, and wanted attention. He wanted to be fed, he wanted water, he needed everything. And I mean, I'm very nice to Baji, I love Baji, and I would always be very nice to him. But I think because I was chanting and I was reading Patanjali, so I was in a very soft, open internal state. And even though the last thing in the world I felt like doing right then and there was hand feeding him his food and scratching his neck and just doing all the Baji care things that he wanted, I felt so much love and sweetness that I just, it was fine, you know, and I stopped what I was doing and I was just scratching his neck and feeding him his food, and there was such delight, there was such sweetness, there was such love, and there was such ease that it made no difference that it was not at all what I had wanted to be doing with myself in that particular moment. It didn't matter at all. There was just sweetness and joy. Because when we're merged with that state, it doesn't matter what's coming down the pike. If it's what's on the to-do list or what's off the to-do list, it doesn't matter. It's all the same. You know, one of the concepts we talk about in the yogic system is giving up doership. This is the path of karma yoga. And when we practice karma yoga, we learn to live in the present moment, to not be attached to the final outcome, to not do anything because of a goal. We do simply for the pure act of doing, for no reason other than our doing as an expression of that passion for life. That every action is an expression of being present in the moment and as absolutely aligned with our depth and possibility and wonder as we can be. There's no external grasping, there's no goal, there's nowhere to get to, there's nothing to attain, there's nothing to acquire. It's just right here in the present moment. And that state, it's right here, waiting for us to remember, oh yeah, there you are. Let me open up and merge back down into you. And then one of the yogic states is called Sahaja Samadhi, Samadhi with open eyes. And that's the state when we just live in being. And the agendas have fallen away, and the I-maker has fallen away, and the kleshas have fallen away. And we simply are that pure luminosity. I won't take the time to look for it now, but there's another commentary in one of the sutras where it talks about when we live in truthfulness, wherever we go, we imbue the atmosphere with truthfulness, satya. When we live in nonviolence, ahimsa, we imbue the atmosphere so that people around us are infected by that presence, the presence of truth, the presence of loving kindness, otherwise known as nonviolence, non-harming. So it's so good to cultivate all these so-called divine potentials. Let's call them our human potentials. Let's say when we're in our more primitive, sense-driven, grasping, klesha-driven state, that's more primitive state. Let's throw divine out the window with such a charged word, and let's become fully human. You know, let's rest in our human potential, you know, become the wonder, that explosive passion for life, luminosity, that's sitting right here in the center of being. So take that in. Maybe just close your eyes. We'll chant the mantra Om Namah Shivaya in just a bit. If you are here for the first time, we're going to chant the slow mantra Om Namah Shivaya in just a bit. This is a mantra we use for meditation. The first syllable is the great primordial sound of Om. Let's say it, Om.
Om.
You want to feel how that Om moves from the way back of your throat out to your lips. Om. Try to say it.
Om.
Yeah. Namah.
Namah.
Shivaya.
Shivaya.
If you really pay attention, feel that Namah. Say it, Namah. Feel how that, especially the Ma, just opens up your chest. Namah. If you think of your sort of your lungs and your chest as the wings of a butterfly, the Na is kind of the part of the butterfly that's not wings, whatever that is, that's the N, Namah. So the N is like your central channel of the butterfly. Think of yourself as a butterfly, Namah. And then the butterfly wings just open up. Say it, Namah.
Namah. Yeah.
And then Shivaya. You can feel how Shivaya just gets that upward pull. Shivaya. Really resonating, Shivaya, Shivaya. And if you really let yourself feel the Shivaya, you'll feel how it goes up and it goes down. Shivaya. You can feel how Namah is very expansive and Shivaya is more up and down. So the Namah Shivaya, it's giving you the whole vertical and horizontal pulse of your being. And Om is like the great circle that holds the whole thing. It's the great container. So, breathe in. And breathe out. And breathe in. And breathe out. And breathe in. And breathe out. And as you breathe in, just imagine that vertical pull. So breathing in and kind of drawing that breath up And then as you exhale again, just feel that vertical pull. Just let the breath come up and down within that vertical pull. Now take each syllable, take the syllable Om. Imagine that you're sitting in this, it's more than a circle, it's like a globe or an orb. You're right at the center and feel the Om as the womb or the egg or the orb. Maybe visualize it golden that you're sitting inside of, and that's Om. Just say it, Om. Yeah, maybe say it silently. Just visualize yourself sitting in this golden womb space, orb space, roundness, and just feel the Om. And then imagine again this great expansive sense of butterflyness. And just again, silently just repeat Nama. Just feel that open-hearted expansion, that horizontal expansiveness of Nama. And Shivaya, feel it moving up and down. Feel that vertical pulse of Shivaya. And by all means, if you feel these syllables differently, feel them in your own way, just use these instructions if they resonate for you, if they inspire you, if they help you. Now, we've been having Monday night class for over a decade. And for all these years, by and large, we've practiced Om Namah Shivaya by silently repeating it on the in-breath, silently repeating it on the out-breath. And this is a perfectly wonderful, excellent meditation practice. But if you feel so inclined tonight, try something a little bit different. As you breathe in, infuse the breath just with Om. And as you breathe out, Nama. And as you breathe in, Shivaya. And then as you breathe out, Om. And as you breathe in, Nama. And as you breathe out, Shivaya. So that each in-breath and out-breath is infused with just one word.